Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. Doug Kazarian joined in studio again with Anita Marks. Amazing when I don't have to travel and
I know.
Travel
I think
to
it's
New
York. Almost like the third week in a row.
I believe so. Yeah, good stuff.
And we're both wearing makeup.
We are. Kat is out of the bag.
Too bad this is a podcast because we actually look quite good today.
Somewhat presentable,
right?
For me,
yeah.
I just spent a couple days in Miami too, so I feel refreshed, recharged.
Way to rub it in.
Flew back yesterday. I was on the beach this time yesterday.
Did you?
And now I'm in wind chill of 7 degrees.
Fancy pants.
I was talking to somebody at the cafeteria earlier that they have to walk outside from a different building to get to the calf. Now we get to stay with the tunnels and everything.
Oh, I don't.
Always.
You do not have to walk outside.
People do.
No, you don't.
Yeah, other people. Like people in like building 15 and stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sucks. Yeah. There's no like underground tunnel here on campus that you can like
trolley or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it stinks. But look, stop it. This is my big thing when I was in local news all throughout my career.
Mm-hmm.
Stop complaining about the weather. It's not like we live in Miami and all of a sudden started snowing. We know this, where we are. This is part of it.
We signed up for this.
It's mid-December.
Right.
It is what it is. Now, if it's like 10 below, schools closed, blizzard, okay. But this is normal. And for the record, my bosses didn't like my chat with the weatherman when I sort of took this stance. It's like, why are we talking 5 minutes about 2 inches of snow? It's February. It's Iowa. Let's move on. I would do that on a three shot.
Well, Iowa, I mean, come on.
That's where snow is.
Snow.
So you can't
snow
be surprised at this stuff.
Snow and big.
And the people listening to this are saying, why are we talking about the weather on a gambling podcast?
Right.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. Well, I was going to segue. We should not be surprised by yet another Rams loss. Last night, Rams mustered just 3 points. Got a little hairy with the point spread, though. The line closed 15.5, and it took a couple fourth down stops for the Seahawks to cover in those neon green.
I called them apple Jolly Ranchers.
Okay.
Right? Did you kind of like, I was having a craving too.
I think the highlighter like, is what I think the more like universal
after,
term.
Like after like the first 5 minutes, I was like craving some like apple Jolly Ranchers. Can't imagine why.
But this was, look, it came out, what, I think the send out was 14. It was a big number. You had Jeff Fisher being fired. Seahawks obviously so dominant at home, much better there than on the road. But the Rams have had their number a little bit. And it is kind of funny, ironic, if you look, the one bright spot for the Rams over the last couple of years has been special teams. Their special teams coordinator became their head coach, and it was a 4th-and-1 fake punt in the fourth quarter that kind of prevented the cover for the
right,
Rams.
Right. I mean, it just goes to show you, like, you know, when you become a head coach, there's just, you become somebody who has to manage men. And I think it's really hard to, like, pay a lot of attention to what your like offensive coordinator, like for example, like we talk about Ben McAdoo and, you know, first year head coach, and he was an offensive coordinator, but first year as a head coach, should he be calling plays on the sideline for the Giants? Giants offense is struggling this year. A lot of people feel that's why. I think it's
with,
really
with that play call sheet with post-its.
Oh my God. It's like a menu from Cheesecake Factory.
That's what they say. Yeah, that's the nickname of it. I just love the post-its. Like, how do you have post-its on that thing?
Because it's so freaking big. Like, but anyway, I mean, my whole point is that's a tough thing to do. It's a tough thing to do when you go from like,
or you don't expect Pete Carroll to go for a fake punt 5.5 minutes to go in a game of a 21-point margin.
That's true.
I mean, that's on your own territory, too.
Right.
But it was an exciting outcome in terms of the point spread down the stretch, and obviously the under hit as well with the Rams just mustering 3 points, and Jared Goff got nuked as well.
Yeah. 39.5 was the over-under, so if you were on the underside, and of course it closed at 15.5, if you were on the Seattle side, well, then you were a big winner. Also, this is interesting, Seattle 7-0 at home this season. 7-0 at home.
That's what they do. They win at home.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been a little bit of a farce on the road at times. I mean, they've lost where? Tampa and some other places. So, and Green Bay as well last week. So, but they're a different team at home, and they clinched the playoff spot. They're just the second team to do that so far in the NFL, with the Cowboys doing it first. We'll see. We'll see what the Seahawks do. I think it was interesting that Richard Sherman got in a shouting match, throwing for it on 1st and goal from the 1. Didn't like that. He's like, we've tried this before, i.e. the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Against
and
the
I don't know about you. I lost money. I lost money on that play.
Why
so,
is that?
What do you mean, why is that? I had Seattle.
Oh, on the Super Bowl. I thought you meant last night. Because they did end up scoring on 3rd down on a on a pass play.
So yeah, you know what? I'd be ticked off too. I'd be screaming at Pete Carroll like, we did this. I lost money with this already. Come on. Didn't we learn our lesson the first time around? Like, let's.
Well, they didn't because by third down, they were thrown again. So they converted there, but that's the Rams. And Seahawks cover, big double-digit favorite covers. Doesn't usually happen in the NFL, but it did last night. We'll talk more NFL action coming up later in the podcast, but first do a little college with the bowling season upon us. We bring in Phil Steele to talk a little college pigskin. And Phil, you were one of the few people who picked Army with the outright victory last week, snapping 14-game losing streak to their rivals, Navy.
Yeah, and the under. So both of those worked out pretty good last week. And, you know, Navy having a backup quarterback, I think, helped, and the fact that Navy was coming off the conference championship game. But finally, Army can breathe a sigh of relief after having those three close losses in the last 4 years.
Actually, really quick, I mean, let's give props where props are due. 5-1 last week, 2-0, as you said, with Army in the under, and then you were 3-1 in the NFL. I mean, Daddy bought himself a new pair of shoes, did he not, Phil?
I appreciate that, Anita. Thanks for bringing that up. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a pretty good week in the NFL as well, so very pleased. Thank you very much.
All right, well, the bowl season is here. 41 games, I believe it is.
41, yeah.
With 80 teams playing, obviously the extra one with the championship game. So all gets going Saturday. We can talk, have happier thoughts now with some of the stuff that's been going on this week. Let's get into the bowl games. As for the next week and change, we'll have others down the road for New Year's and stuff, but you know, we have what is it, 4 games tomorrow, I believe?
Five
bowl games on Saturday. So let's start. You like one of them, particularly with the Las Vegas Bowl.
Yeah, and in the Las Vegas Bowl, it's a San Diego State team that I rode most of the season. They're great when it comes to Mountain West play. But something happened to San Diego State this year at the end of the year. Once they wrapped up the Mountain West division, they were in the title game, they sort of came up short in their last three games against the spread. They lost to Wyoming, got dominated by Colorado State, and then lost to Wyoming again in the Mountain West title game. Even though they probably deserved to win the game, they did not, so they sort of limp into this one. I also like the matchup. You know, when I went through Houston, and I'm writing the magazine now, and I go through three different write-throughs. The first one's a postseason. When I went through Houston's season game by game, their linebacking core was banged up in the middle of the year. They're missing their top two linebackers in games like Navy and SMU. Their running back core was banged up all year. Duke Catalina only has around for a couple of games at 100%. Greg Ward, their quarterback, banged up all year. Now you're getting all those guys back, ready, healthy, and Houston's a pretty good football team. They're also deadly against the run. They allow just 98 yards per game rush, 2.9 yards per carry, and Ed Oliver is a guy who's going to be a future high first-round draft pick. He's only a true freshman, so we're going to have to wait a couple of years for that, but he can be dominant up front. San Diego State needs to be able to run the football to have success. They've got one of the best guys out there in Donnell Pumphrey, and Rashad Penny's not bad either. He averages 7.9 yards a carry. But I think Pumphrey and Penny are going to find their sledding tough here against a Houston rush defense. Meanwhile, on the flip side of the coin, San Diego State has an excellent defense, but I think Houston's got the weapons to score some points. So this is one of those games where even though you would think Houston losing their head coach is in bad shape, but Major Applewhite's their new head coach, and he's taken over. So they're going to be playing with some excitement here. I like Houston to win this one by a touchdown or more, so I'm going to take Houston minus the 4.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the you know, with no Tom Herman component, so you have Pumphrey in his final game in his hometown, by the way, of Las Vegas. So pretty cool story there. But you don't have I guess, how does Tom Herman leaving, and you sort of answered it with Major Applewhite replacing him here.
Yeah, if it was an interim head coach, I would have trouble with Houston because they'd be wondering, who's the new head coach going to be? What are we going to do? But this is one where when they were interviewing the other head coaches, the players went to the athletic director and said, we want Major Applewhite as our head coach. And when Major Applewhite took over, you know, basically your offense coordinator is the same, your defense coordinator is the same, and this is the guy who's going to coach you next year. So it's the first game for Major Applewhite. I think that's a big plus whenever a coach leaves.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to go there. You know, I find it interesting. I think there's two sides of the coin here, though. Phil, I mean, you're talking about young men, right? Like, what, 18, 19, 20 years old. I mean, this is a lot of change for a program. And then, of course, the excitement and heading into the bowl games. I don't know. I think the situation is, I think it could go one way or another.
I think in this case it goes their way with Major Applewhite being named and not losing your offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator. And the coaches don't have to worry right now about scrambling around looking for jobs either.
Yeah, that's key. Like you said, it's not an interim situation.
All right, Phil, number two, Wyoming +9 over BYU. BYU having the better defense, also in regard to points per game, allowing rushing yards, some of the lowest in the business, but you still like Wyoming getting the points.
Yeah, no doubt BYU's the better team with a much better defense. Mm-hmm. They're giving up 364 yards per game. Wyoming giving up a full 100 yards more. BYU's holding their opponents to 47 yards below their season average. Wyoming's giving up 56 yards above their season average. So clear cut, BYU has a large defensive edge here. And I'm not concerned with BYU losing Taysom Hill at QB because Tanner Mangum is probably a better fit for their offense. He's more of a throwing quarterback, and that's the offense that they're moving to. So I think overall, I'm pleased. I think BYU's the better team. So why the heck do I like Wyoming? Well, they've got a couple of good weapons on offense. Brian Hill at running back rushed for 1,767 yards this year, 5.5 yards per carry. And Josh Allen, their quarterback, is a dual-threat QB. He ran for almost 500 yards. He threw for almost 3,000 yards. He's got a solid 26-13 ratio, and they've got some weapons at receiver. But I love the way Wyoming plays as a dog against the big boys. Go back to this year. They played Nebraska, and you'd look and you say, wow, they got beat 52-17. Why would you even bring that up? Well, it was 24-17 in the fourth quarter. They just wore down against the Huskers. But in their other ones, they upset Air Force as an underdog. They played Boise State. Now, you got to admit, Boise State's a pretty good team. They upset them as a large underdog. They played San Diego State at home as a large underdog. And guess what? Upset San Diego State. And the last big quality team they've played, San Diego State, they only lost to them by 3 and got the cover in that. So they play great against the big boys teams in BYU's class. I would put Boise, San Diego State, Air Force, all in BYU's class this year. So it's also you look at the head coach Satake for BYU. This is his first bowl game, first trip to the postseason. Meanwhile, the head coach Craig Bohl for Wyoming, while it's his first bowl game, he's got a little bit of postseason experience taking North Dakota State to a bunch of titles. So add it all up. I like large underdogs in bowl games to begin with, and I think Wyoming, the way they play the big boys, are definitely worth the +9 in this one.
And that's the Poinsettia Bowl. And we actually called a year ago to ask him if it was Poinsettia or Poinsettia. And it's Poinsettia.
So that's, you know, that's the way I pronounced it my whole life growing up. And then I started hearing on TV Poinsettia Bowl, and I started changing it. So the Poinsettia Bowl calls it Poinsettia.
Yes, and I believe both are allowed. You know, it's tomato, tomato. But I think Poinsettia is preferred. So that's Wednesday night on ESPN. Let's go to Friday's action. And after just taking an under in a Navy game, you like over with Navy playing in the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl.
Yeah, and the reasons I like the under in the Army-Navy game was, A, that Navy had a first-time starting quarterback in Zach Abey, and two, they were playing Army. Army defends the option every single day in practice. They know it inside and out. If you follow Army-Navy, I believe that's 11 straight unders now when those two play. So it's just an automatic for me every year to play it. But when you get a clash in styles like we have here, that's when I like the over, because Louisiana Tech has not defended the option the entire year. And while they do have a couple extra weeks to prepare for the option, I think the option will still be effective against their defense. And on the flip side of the coin, Navy does not defend the pass very well. Trent Taylor, Carlos Henderson are a couple of 1,000-yard receivers, Louisiana Tech. Ryan Higgins throws the football over the field, 66% completions, a 37-8 ratio. I don't see any of those Navy DBs being able to hold up against Taylor and Henderson. And like I said, with Navy, their option, Zach Abey now has extra time to prepare. They've only had their Army game was 2 weeks ago, so they'll be still in sync and in their option game. I like Navy to score points here. I like Louisiana Tech to score points here. Total's only, I think, 66 at this point, which is relatively low for a clash of styles. A lot of Navy games this year were up in the 80s, and I think we're going to head to this one probably being over 70 by game time. So get it now at 66 with the Navy-Louisiana Tech game.
All right, last but not least, you're all over NC State -4 against Vandy.
You know, and here's something that was really surprising to me in this game when I was breaking it down in the bowls. In my head, the first thing I think of when I think of Vanderbilt is, boy, do they have a good defense, because Derek Mason took over calling their defense 2 years ago, and they have clearly, the defense has kept them in many games. They haven't really had a good offense. They had a good offense in their final two games of the season. I'm talking about Mississippi and Tennessee, but those were a couple of defenses that were very banged up. Well, this surprised me. When I looked at Vanderbilt's defense, they allow 411 yards per game. When you look at NC State's defense, they give up 356 yards per game. And you look at NC State coming in, they've got some hosses up front on that defensive line. They've got 31 sacks this year. They can get after the quarterback. Vanderbilt, on the other side of the coin, only has 16 sacks this year. Vanderbilt's holding opponents to 24 yards below their season average. NC State's holding opponents to 66 yards below their season average. So you don't think NC State and good defense, but they actually have better defensive numbers, and I think they probably have better defensive personnel, with the exception of linebacker Zach Cunningham, who I think is one of the best linebackers in the game, plays for Vanderbilt. But I like NC State's defense. Now, offensively, then, there's no question in my mind. I mean, Ralph Webb, Matthew Days, probably pretty close as far as the two running backs go. Both are good for about 100 yards every game. But I'm going to take Ryan Finley over Kyle Shermer. I'm going to take the NC State offensive line over the Vanderbilt offensive line. NC State's only allowed 17 sacks this year. Vandy's given up 27. So you got the better offense, and believe it or not, have the better defense. And NC State's pretty decent on special teams as well. So add it all up. I like NC State to win this one by a touchdown or more.
All right, good stuff, Phil. I know we usually have a litany of games to go down, but with the bowl season, you know, usually I'll have a couple that jump out right away, but I feel like I need to get a feel for common opponents, things like that, the first week or so. Do you have like a – do you wait to see – do you connect those dots at all? That you say, hey, well, this team was second in the X conference and they got blown out, and maybe try to deduce, because we don't really know – like, we all think the Big Ten is the best division, but what if it's not? Like, we think we know things, but we actually may not know anything at all. So sometimes the bowl games can give us a little bit more evidence.
Yeah, it can. And I usually do go through, you know, prior to doing my bowl confidence plays naturally, which, by the way, I have a bowl confidence contest on philsteele.com, which you two are both going to enter, correct?
Yes.
All right.
Watch out.
And then he is going to win it. That's the amazing thing. But, yeah, I think when you – the funny thing, Doug, is the Big Ten is actually an underdog in more games than they're favored this year. And the SEC, it's pretty close. I think they're only favored in one more game than they are. So that, to me, is a little bit of an upset. It shows you about the quality of foes that they play, because some of the Power 5 conferences take on a bunch of Group of 5 teams, whereas the Big Ten usually has their number 4 team against another conference's number 2 team. That's why they're more underdogs in the Big Ten than favorites roll this year. But, yeah, I think you can learn something from the Bulls as they roll along.
And that's what I wanted to ask you. So a couple of these games I'm looking at, but I'm going to wait till we see some more action in the early games to kind of get a feel for things. One game that I'm curious about is this Wake Forest-Temple game. Now, I think, you know me, I always play shrink here when analyzing games and throughout the course of the season, but I just think this Wake team, you know, early thought would be like, hey, they want to go out and prove everyone wrong, whatever. But I think now they're just, it's a circus right now with interviews, coaches, they're dwelling on the past. And I think this Temple team, you know, the problem is no Matt Rule, but like moving forward, I think Temple's going to be more polished and more focused on winning this game.
You know, and the thing I have found is, and one thing you might put in your mind when you're handicapping the Bulls, generally pre-January 1, large underdogs do extremely well. I'm talking about plus 60%, well over 60%. It used to be closer to like 68%, but it's still well over 60% for pre-January 1 underdogs, because they hear the whole time they can't play, can't do this. The opponent comes in. There's nothing big on the line in these pre-January 1 bowl games. So they're generally, you know, they don't come in with that sense of focus, and they think they're just going to throw their helmets on the field and win. So that's going in Wake Forest's favor. As you touched on Matt Rule not being there, I think that's going to be pretty big. Now, Temple's defense, Wake Forest offense, you're talking about one of the best defenses in college football against one of the weakest offenses. But on the flip side of the coin, Wake's got a pretty good defense. And do keep in mind, against Louisville, a pretty good Louisville team, they led 12-10 with 10 minutes to go in that game. Against Florida State, they only lost by 11 this year. And that was giving away their game plan, huh? And when you look at Wake Forest, I think that they have a little bit more to play for. They're going to be pumped up because they are the bowl underdog, hearing that they don't have a chance. They're not even going to be able to move the football. I actually lean a little bit with Wake in that game.
And another game that's caught my eye is Pitt laying 5 to Northwestern. The problem is the Matt Canada component. That concerns me.
Yeah, and Matt Canada leaving at this point, definitely hurts because their offense has been unstoppable this year. But surprisingly, their defense. Now, Pat Narduzzi's the head coach, right? So you would expect, hey, Pitt's defense is going to be at the top. They're actually allowing their opponents 57 yards above their season average. So if a team comes in averaging 400 yards per game, they get 457 against Pitt. That's a shocking number to me. I would have definitely thought that would have been, if you would have said 57, I would have said, okay, it would be under 57 with Narduzzi as the head coach. And Northwestern was playing better football down the stretch this year. The Wisconsin game, they were competitive in that one. The Ohio State game, they only lost by four. Clayton Thorson, the difference between their offense last year and this year, they didn't really allow Thorson to throw last year, and when he did, he wasn't very successful. He had a 7-9 ratio. This year, Thorson has 21 touchdown passes, just 8 interceptions. They also have one of the best running backs in the Big Ten in Justin Jackson. They also have one of the best wide receivers in the Big Ten in Austin Carr. Their defense allows opponents 7 yards above their season average. So I think talent-wise, they can hang with Pitt. Pitt does have two of the biggest wins of the year. They beat Penn State. But do keep in mind, Penn State's linebackers were a little banged up for that game, and Penn State's offense wasn't in flow yet, but they did beat Clemson on the road later in the year. So they've beaten two top five teams so far this year, and that's probably, to me, it's a tougher game to call, but I can make a case for both teams there.
Yeah, I was just saying that my frustrations with some of these bowl matchups, because I wanted to take certain teams. And then
a coach leaves.
Yeah, it's just something that scared me off, and I probably will get involved with a couple. Obviously, we're going to get involved in the bowl pick'em, and we have a bunch of stuff going on the ESPN chalk page. But that's where my apprehension is here, December 16th, when we're taping the pod. And that's why I don't have like 8 or 15 plays for you to break down.
Are you guys surprised P.J. Fleck is still the head coach of Western Michigan?
A little bit, but when I think about it, not so much. When I see the big-name programs were really the only ones that hired, and then he's not going to leave to go to Florida Atlantic. That had to be a Lane Kiffin situation.
Right.
And then just when people talked about, I don't want to call it, some smoke and mirrors, but he had a lot of seniors. He did a good job, but he is young, and that rah-rah style may not work at a major Power 5 program. So once I looked at it more closely and heard what other people said, it sort of did make sense that, he didn't get high. I thought Purdue maybe was the only one that I thought he could go to.
Yeah. And Anita, how do you pronounce it? Poinsettia or poinsettia?
Poinsettia. I'm from Miami.
Very
poinsettia.
Good.
It's poinsettias. And you plant them around your house, so you have a beautiful home. I actually have two games I was told I need to ask you about from
awesome.
My mom, Mama Mimi, who is maybe more of a degenerate than I am. And so I have two games on the docket I'd like your and Doug's advice on for my mom. And that's Appalachian State or Toledo. Who do you like there?
If you take a look defensively, you go with App State. They've got the edge at linebacker, defensive back, overall defense. If you look at these teams offensively, you go at Toledo. Logan Woodside's got a 43-9 ratio. They've got the receivers with Cody Thompson getting over 1,000 yards. And, both teams have a 1,000-yard running backs. So Toledo's got the offensive edge. App State's got the defensive edge. So where do you go? What do you
I'm
do
asking you.
Point?
You're the expert.
No, I'm saying where would you go at that point, Anita? What would you look at?
Defense. Defense wins championships. Defense wins bowl games.
No, special teams, Anita. I remember we had that conversation about special teams last week. I thought you'd jump right in there.
I'm sorry. I haven't had my shot at Jameson yet. Go ahead.
There you go. And who's got the edge on special teams? The answer is Toledo. Toledo's got my number 35 rated special teams. App State's got the number 72 rated special teams. So I'm going to go with Toledo because of the special teams edge.
All right, I've got one more, and that is UCF and Arkansas. That's where my Arkansas came from. What side of the coin are you here?
UCF is a team. Here's a surprising stat for you. They in American Conference play this year, they were outgained in all 8 games. Can you believe that? They're actually minus 20 yards for the season, and yet they're here they are in a bowl game. With Arkansas State, probably should have been the Sun Belt champ this year. Their one loss was at UL Lafayette. They had a 521, 292-yard edge, but came up short. They played great down the stretch, and they've got a lot of Power 5 transfers. Guys like their quarterback is Justice Hansen, who's an Oklahoma transfer and was a VHD coming out of high school. Kendall Sanders was PS number 20. He's a Texas transfer, a wide receiver. Cam Eccles-Looper is a TCU transfer, a wide receiver kick returner. And they've got had a guy on the defensive line, D-liner. He was number 5 rated defensive lineman out of high school. He signed at Alabama, so you have to be a good defensive lineman to sign there. He's playing for Arkansas State. So this is an Arkansas State that I think is highly underrated. I'm taking the underdog there, and Arkansas State plus the points.
Always good stuff, Phil. We appreciate you breaking it down. Obviously, it's early. We're going to have you back on to break down some of the New Year's Bowl games and when the action really picks up. But as you very well know, the tickets on Saturday the 17th cash the same as the national championship game.
Yeah, and I wish you guys a happy holidays, but we'll be talking before the holidays. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to breaking down a bunch of bowls, and good luck on your NFL place today. I hear you guys are handling all the NFL.
Yeah, we got it. We're going to be dishing out winners left and right.
Nice. I love it.
Hopefully we can do just as well as you did last week where you went 3-1. So kudos to you, my friend.
Well, thank you very much, Anita. You guys have a great weekend. Enjoy those start of the bowls.
All right, you too. Happy bowl season to you as well.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks to Phil Steele. And we're time now to switch gears to the aforementioned NFL card. That's coming up next. Back with you on the Behind the Bets podcast, Doug Kazarian alongside Anita Marks. We've covered the college portion of the podcast. Time now to talk professional football. And, this football season is just, it's been weird. I've ranted on the pod when I filled in for Chad Millman a week and change ago. A lot of people blew me up on Twitter. They're like, you're not understanding the concept of a point spread. It's almost like you don't see that it's like the underdogs are getting points. I'm like, oh, no, I see it. And then it turns out Dave Purdom did a story on it. And like the books have been getting pummeled this year on the Browns and Jaguars, and I think the 49ers as well. And my thing is, like, look, I get the double-digit dog, even 7.5, 8.5. I get the Rams last night. That all makes sense. But when these ugly dogs like the Browns, who I actually did like last week, full disclosure, and the Jaguars are getting like 3, like I don't understand how people with all these bets on the board, and you have first half bets, you have over-unders, you are taking your taxable income, going up to the window, laying 110, and saying, yes, I will take the Jaguars plus 3. Like I don't get why they're backing bad teams. And then they don't understand, oh, my God, that they were covering, and then the final 5 minutes they blew it. It's like, yeah, that's because you're backing the Jaguars.
But that's the risk. That's the risk you take in putting your money on these cellar dwellers.
And I think I don't understand why people will do it on a routine. I don't get it when they say the sharps are on this. Like, most sharps don't make any money in the NFL. They sell picks.
Well,
and
let me ask you this.
It's a grind.
Well, let me ask you this. What's the percentage of people that you feel lay money, Doug, on piss poor teams just because gives them a reason to watch,
not anyone I talk to,
and they have that money to blow, So
no,
they're just,
I think there's an allure to like outsmarting the common man, so to speak. I think it's like you can pump your chest out a little bit if you like cover with the Jaguars. I think it's and like that's what I say about betting against Belichick. When you beat the Patriots with the point spread, you think you're like it's like the better feeling. Like, look, it's just my philosophy. Now, again, I don't think you should lay the 14, 15 and a half like last. Like, I get all that. I mean, the Browns are catching 10. Like, I can't fault anyone for taking 10 points this weekend, especially against a Buffalo team that's not very good. I get all that. What I don't understand is what I talked about last week on the podcast. I don't get the plus 3. I don't get the plus 4 with these teams that have like are awful. And like, yeah, you may catch lightning in a bottle.
Well, I'll take, all right,
but
let's
what's
take,
the point? Like, why are you doing that?
Let's take Cleveland, for example, okay? A lot of people feel that like Cleveland is just like on the verge of winning that one game.
Great.
And
so
I feel like it's each and every week. It's like, could this be the week? Could this be the week? Like, you know, you especially I think with RG3 coming back, I think that for some people, not all, but for some people, there was some hope there that the quarterback situation
would
get better. Full
disclosure, in my pick'em, I took him last week. I got the concept. But
right.
If I'm going to single out like 3 games to go actually bet if I'm in Vegas,
yeah, this isn't,
I'm not picking them to do it. Like right. I don't get that thought process. I just don't when it's the small lines in a team that's 2-11 against the spread.
Doug, there are people who bet on every game.
Okay.
Just because they can. They've got that type of expendable money to blow.
and
it gives them a reason to watch.
And I've been a supporter of that concept. Like, I think there's no difference between buying a bucket of beers and watching a football game and putting $50 on a parlay. Like, I think it's entertainment and it's actually clean entertainment, but that's a whole separate. So I get it. I just, that's what I just don't understand is when these lines are so small. And my other thing is why these bookmakers complain about getting buried on the Browns. We'll just take more money on from the sharps. Like, if you're so worried about your risk, just take more money. So it's interesting. I think finally this week we're seeing the lines inflated more justly. So it's finally the books are like,
yeah, but
all
right, it's taken 15 waves.
Well, that's sort of where I stand. All right, let's get into our picks. And I'm going to start with the Browns. No, just kidding. who am I to lay, you know, I want to lay the points, but I can't lay points with Buffalo. What's your first
pick?
Can't do it.
All right, here we go. Minnesota -4 against the Indianapolis Colts. This is an Indianapolis team who, I mean, they're unraveling. All right, wheels are falling off right now. On top of that, I love the Minnesota Vikings defense, especially their front four, their front seven. Indianapolis, their offensive line is horrible. I just think this is a team that's ready to pack it in. Meanwhile, Minnesota, more motivation to play because they're competing with Green Bay. They're competing with the Giants. They're trying to get in potentially to win the division or let alone as a wild card. So I think the motivation is there. I like the matchup. Minnesota is at home. And also, we just got wind that Adrian Peterson is going to suit up and play. Now, is he going to be on a pitch count? Maybe, probably. I would imagine so. But still, it's Adrian Peterson. Right now, that line is 4. I wouldn't be surprised if it drops into maybe 5, 5.5, maybe 6 at kickoff. But right now, if it's at 4, you can get them. I love it. I love Minnesota.
That's good news, obviously, with Peterson coming back, just if you're a football fan in general. But why do you think the Colts have packed it in? They were in first place a week ago. Now they're a game out.
I just think they're struggling. I think it's evident. They don't, you know, they've got a number of defensive players that are injured. I want to say last week they had 4 starters on defense that could not suit up and play. Now Philip Dorsett on the offense side of the ball, he's injured. And the offensive line is just...
So they're hurting. They're not so much
they're hurting. They're not playing well. They have to go on the road. They have to play at Minnesota. I think this is a team that's ready to regroup, pack it in, and look for next season. Just my take.
Gotcha.
My take.
All right. One game I like that... I like the Raiders going on the road and laying 3. I think it's a bounce-back performance for them. They did not look good. I am a little concerned with Carr's hand. Don't get me wrong, I am. But I think the San Diego team is not very good. I think they've got a lot of juice.
There's so many injuries.
Right. They got a lot of
now
juice
Melvin Gordon's
equity
out.
Earlier in the season from those close games, and they were good, whether it be the analytics or whatever. They blew some games in the fourth quarter. They milked that to a certain extent, and then it's just now it's like, they kind of are who they are now, and they're in last place for a reason. I think the Raiders, look, they caught the Chiefs on that Thursday on the road in cold weather. If Amari Cooper catches that ball, who knows what happens in that game. There were a couple other plays that swung it against the Raiders. And I like betting on teams that have the extra rest this late in the season. They played last Thursday. They get 10 days. To your point, the Chargers are banged up. I'll lay the 3 on the road with Oakland in San Diego.
I like that. I like that play a lot. My play number 2 is Tennessee +5.5 at Kansas City. I feel Tennessee, yet again, a lot more motivation to play and of course, needing to win to try to get into the postseason. I think weather conditions aren't going to be that great. I think it's going to be a very low-scoring game. I think whether Kansas City wins, Tennessee wins, I think it's only going to be by 3 points. So I love the fact that they're getting 5.5. This is a team that has been able to win on the road. Granted, I know Kansas City is a tough place to play, but Tennessee, they've won at Detroit. They've won it at Miami. They've won it at Chicago. So they're able to win on the road. I love Marcus Mariota. I think this Tennessee team competes and contends with Kansas City. So you know what? They're on the road. So what? I'll take the 5.5. I like it.
Yeah, Tennessee's a good football team. I like that. I think people are writing them off as like, okay, maybe they're just good at home. But they're a legit contender for an outside chance at a playoff spot. I like
also, I look a lot at the wide receiver, you know, because this is a pass-happy NFL, right? I mean, this is what we've become. Even though the weather conditions are going to be more conducive to running the football, Rishard Matthews has been really phenomenal this season. The chemistry that's developed between him and Marcus Mariota. And one thing about Kansas City is that you can beat them in the air. Whether it's the long ball, whether it's the dink and dunk, and so I'm, you know, and of course it's the fantasy football freak in me.
Right.
I think Marcus Mariota and Rishard Matthews actually are going to put up some solid fantasy football points against this Kansas City team and score some points.
That's a tough secondary.
I like Tennessee.
All right, the game I like, and it seems too good to be true, so I fully expect to lose it, but I am going to go as one of my picks is Tampa Bay +7 in Dallas. Look, the Cowboys train was tough to get in front of. What did they cover, 11 straight or something like that? Now they've lost 3 straight against the spread. Look, the Cowboys-Giants game last Sunday could have gone either way. They easily could have covered. There were a couple plays, obviously, that Eli got away with With that being said, this Tampa team has really impressed me, catching a full touchdown here in this spot. Sunday night, they've covered five straight against the spread. They've won five straight. I like them to go in there and keep it within seven. I think the line is way inflated. I think it should have been 4.5, or I'll take the full seven. But because it looks too good to be true, I fully expect to lose.
I like that side of the coin. Right. If it was 7.5, I'd probably be doing cartwheels. I'm with you. I'm not sitting here telling you that Tampa's going to win, but I think they'll keep it within seven.
I wouldn't be shocked if they did, though.
I wouldn't be shocked either. Also, last but not least, I love Denver at home getting three against New England. It is very, very – you've got two of the best defenses in the NFL that the New England Patriots are just coming off of playing against the Ravens and then now heading to Denver to take on a Denver Broncos team. That's hard. Whenever you play the Ravens – the day after, you're pretty beat up. I mean, not just the day after, but also a few days after. I think it's really hard to get up for another heavyweight bout that this Patriots team is going to face against Denver. And they are home. Anytime you got Denver, you got a great defense like that, getting the points. And again, you know, you're sitting here talking about Cleveland and San Francisco and these teams that have no dog in the fight anymore. Denver obviously does. So I like Denver. I like Denver getting the 3 points at home.
I actually am waiting for you because I knew we were opposite sides of this one. So I like New England in this case. Look, it's Denver. Brady has not played well in the past. What is he, 2-7 there, Josh, in Denver? I just think it's New England -3 against Trevor Siemian. And I'm going to take my chances. But you're right. The spot is bad. It's on the road, short week, off the high of a Monday night win against a team they don't like. I get all that. But that's why the line's only 3. And I don't think the Ravens' defense is quite like it has been in the past. I don't think it was as physical of a game. I'd like New England to go in there and win because I don't trust Trevor Siemian. I think the Broncos are just overrated. They've been milking that defense a little too much. They're not that good of a football team.
It's interesting you say it's Brady against Trevor Siemian. I don't think it's the case. I think it's LeGarrette Blount against Trevor Siemian. I don't think you cannot pass against this Denver secondary. I think this is going to be a situation where they go in and they're going to give LeGarrette Blount at least 20-25 touches to see what he can do in rushing the football against the Denver Broncos. I think that's, you know, if LeGarrette Blount comes out and rushes for, you know, over 100 yards and has two touchdowns, then yeah, you know what? I think you might be spot on. I just don't think he's going to be able to do that against Denver.
It's my least confident of my four plays.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as the card comes out, I always go to look to see New England has and what the spread is, and I try to talk myself into it. There's a little bit of a force here because it's just enticing to take the Patriots -3. And if they don't cover, they don't cover. And look, I've been burned in the past backing them in this spot. But I think there's a little revenge factor with the AFC Championship game and even losing there in the regular season a year ago when they had that crazy fourth quarter, like a muff punt. They had that game won. Now, that was against Osweiler, and Simeon's a little better. But I don't think Simeon's very good at all. And I think he's gotten away with a few things. And I think Bill Belichick's going to, as they say, you know, we always use this phrase a little bit, overuse it, make him play left-handed. So you got a final game?
Those are my three top plays. I'm leaning towards, I like Pittsburgh, -3.5 at Cincinnati. I think Pittsburgh's really rolling right now.
You like a -3 because that's where it is. You can lay 3 now.
Oh, really? It's now. Oh, and that's nice. Yeah. Are you kidding? Yeah. 2.5 even. Let's bring it down even more.
Well, it's not available, but 3 is available.
As we get closer to kickoff, why not?
Why don't you take +10? Why? Because it's not available. Either is 2.5.
So. Yeah, but if it's moved down to 3, who knows what it moves down to at kickoff? Also,
yeah, that's a good point.
Also, I like Detroit +4. I think this game is going to be really close against the Giants. I'm looking at like 17-16, something in that ballpark. I think it's going to be a really low-scoring game. I like the under.
Stafford's glove that he's going to wear, or just the middle finger?
Yeah, isn't that going to be cute? And I like the under at 41. Also, very interesting to note, the Chicago-Green Bay game, coldest weather conditions ever in the history of football for the Chicago Bears. It's supposed to be absolutely brutal. That over-under is at 39.5. Players are not going to want to be out there. Are you kidding? It's going to be like 20 degrees below zero by halftime.
They have a Cali quarterback, Matt Barkley, right?
You know, their snot is going to be frozen to the side of their nose.
Who does that mean over or under?
Who wants to be out there in that? I think it's the under. I'm all over the under at 39.5. These guys, I mean, I don't.
Okay.
How are these guys going to walk, let alone
then
think in those
defensive players aren't going to want to be out there, and they maybe give up one touchdown.
I don't think anyone's going to want to be out there. You don't want to tackle. You don't want to get tackled. The ball sucks. You can't catch it. You can't throw it. I think it's going to be a poop show.
All right. Well, I have an over-under as my favorite play. That's Monday night. I like Carolina-Washington to go over the total of 50.5. This Redskins offense puts up points at home. I think Carolina's done. Nice effort at home to get back in the W column last week. But I think this is going to be a little bit of a track meet. So I like over 50.5 Monday night as my favorite play. I am not alive in my survivor pool.
You're not?
No.
Shame on you. I am.
Eliminated week three. In the pool that I'm in, there was like six guys who've all succeeded the last 4 weeks. Then one guy lost this week. Finally, we had a guy lose in the last 4 weeks.
Could he still buy in?
No.
So you're past the buy-in.
There's five guys left in my pool. So I'm actually like wondering what's going to happen. Like when you go through week 17, like you all chop it up. So I'm impressed. I've never seen a pool that's gone 17 weeks.
So here's it really quick. Here's an interesting eliminator pool story. So I had a friend of mine who was an eliminator pool, and like the winner walks away with like $200,000. Yeah. I mean, it was just, it's ridiculous cash for an eliminator pool. It was fun stuff. Okay. And there were two more people that still were alive. So what he did is he called them and said, "Hey, how about we just end it here? And we split the $200,000 three ways." Both of those two dudes said no.
See, I wouldn't do it even split, but I would do it. This has happened. Like, you agree to a percentage. Like, hey, winner gets 90%. The other guys get 5%. Like, so you agree that whoever wins, let it play out. But the guys, we've gone this far. The mutual agreement. I've seen that. So the other guys just said no.
The other guys said
like,
no.
Let it ride.
Right. And I apologize. I don't remember the year it was. But going into that game, and it was week 17, there was like an absolute gimme game. And they had not used that team. And so the two guys that said no picked that game. And so my friend who offered to split the pie three ways picked another game, ended up winning the whole thing.
Good for him.
Right?
He had a very, very safe approach, but didn't get rewarded. Ultimately, he did get.
So
really
I share that story. So if you're an eliminator pool and you've only got like, you know, two or three people left, you know, that might be a very wise phone call to make right now.
Yeah,
right?
I like what I've done, what I've seen in my pool, that the guys in second and third are, you know, the three guys say, hey, let's chop it up, that the other two guys at least get 5% of the pool or something like that, especially if it's that big of a number.
So you
more importantly,
hear,
this
you
week.
You want to hear what the Brainiacs say?
Well, I'm
up
assuming
here?
Seattle last night would have been a no-brainer.
Seattle was 89%.
If you still had Seattle available this late in the season, unlikely. Atlanta, if you have them available, I would think that's a pretty good.
That's 87% Atlanta over San Francisco.
Right? I would guess I would not get involved with Buffalo and the Cleveland. Well, maybe
How
I would.
How about this? That's another 89%.
Buffalo's
so
not very good.
Buffalo over Cleveland, but they're at Buffalo. Buffalo over Cleveland.
And Cleveland's awful.
Seattle over the Rams. Two of the highest FPI chance to win at 89%. Atlanta at 87. How about the Texans over the Jacksonville Jaguars? They're at 66.
I mean, they're. I'm not going down with Brock Osweiler. How about, would you have, I mean, look, not a lot of teams left, right? We're week 15. Washington's probably available, maybe, hosting Carolina.
I don't have the FPI for that.
That's a 6.5 point spread. So,
but I'll tell you, Kansas City over Tennessee, 67%. And last but not least, Green Bay over Chicago, 65%.
All right. So best of luck to everyone out there who's still alive in the survivor pools. I am not. But neither you are not either.
I am. I am alive.
Are.
I had to buy in, if you recall. Oh, I had to buy back in.
Really,
but that was a few. What do you mean? It's one of the. It's the rules. You're
That's
allowed
fair.
To buy back in.
It's,
I bought back in.
It's a rule for everyone. It's a rule for everyone.
I'm active and attractive.
we're doing this next Friday, aren't we, Josh? Yep, Josh is nodding. So we'll be able to wish everyone happy holidays on the 23rd. Until then, best of luck to everyone, and special thanks to Phil Steele as well. And enjoy the bowl season, everyone. It's really a fun time of year. I hate when people say there's too many bowl games. Like, well, you know what? Then don't watch them. Like, let us.
Or you know what? Better yet, put money on them.
Let us watch
and
them.
And that's your motivation
let
to watch.
Let us fire on them. They're great memories for the kids. They all get to go to the bowl games. Just stop being a Grinch this holiday season. We'll check back with everyone next week.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.